Yeah, I need to explain because it's not very descriptive. There's been a long history of trying to get a proper specialist appointment over and over, and like I can't get a doctor to write in clear English. It's just they don't reach the destination. Long story short, cut long story short, I'll explain.
Yeah.
So I've had belly problems for a while, and there's things that happened a number of years ago that would have caused a cholera infection, and there's an obvious cause for it a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's not a recurring thing. It was different from something I had a long time ago. So time after that, a couple of years went by, and cholera started. My belly started coming up, and I've taken three small cholera treatments.
Okay.
Typically, the double antibiotics, head-on pumping, and all that kind of stuff. So the first time, I'll just back up for a second. My symptoms were not minor, but since 2018, they've been really severe, really bad. I black out and everything. It gets that bad. I spend hours a day in bed, many days.
Yeah.
It's not minor, it's bad. So in 2018, I think it was maybe 2019 or 2018 something, I had took my first course of polio treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And no effect. So I did get to do the breath test after it was several weeks or whatever it is after, and then still got polio. So I took a second treatment, and with a different, I think I took amoxicillin was replaced for metrazole or whatever it's called. You probably know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I did that, and I got maybe 20-30% better, noticeably better, but not better. And I took the polio test after that, and I think it turned it was negative, but then a year later, I never got better. It just got worse again. Slowly got worse again. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a year later that I did another pylori test and then come up positive.
Or so these are all the breath tests, right?
Yeah, the breath tests were pylori. If I recall, this is a number easier. So it's like a recurring pylori thing. So the third pylori treatment, I looked up this a number of times. I just not discovered the thing about bismuth. So apparently bismuth is banned in Australia, and every other country treats it with pylori with bismuth, only Australia doesn't. So I had to get bismuth shipped from overseas from a friend to use that in combination with the third treatment, and I got 50, 60, 70, something like percent better. No, very noticeably better.
Mm-hmm.
Not 100%, but noticeably better, and the polio test also came up negative. And I thought, not 100%, but maybe the ulcers will slowly heal, I'll start getting better slowly over time. I know they started gradually going back downhill again.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been waiting for a long time to get a specialist appointment. I'm probably surviving that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that sick that about a month or two ago, I took antacids for the first time.
Yes.
And this is very important because I took antacids. They're 8 a day, right? 2, whenever I need, whatever. The maximum dose of antacids every day.
Yeah.
And within a week, I was 90% better.
Yeah.
And for 2 to 3 weeks, I say that way, 90% better. I was, the pain gone, the nausea, the fatigue, all the burning, all this kind of stuff. Oh, 90% better. Not 100%, but 90%. And then after about 3 weeks, as I started tapering off the antacids, it all started coming back. Now, they're in groups of 8, they're double
over
strength.
The counter or the
Yeah, they're over the counter at
Gaviscon or Mylanta, or are we talking
Mylanta, about? Mylanta. You know the tablets?
Yep.
Yeah, the double strength Mylanta.
The chewable, kind of crunchy ones.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I got 90% better, and then you weaned it off, and did the symptoms come back?
Yeah, and I tried to take them at maximum strength again. No effect. I actually started getting testicular pain from having them too long after that, so whenever I start having them, I start getting testicular pain, so that's why I went off them. I go off them, it goes away. I go back on them, the pain goes away. So that's the main reason I've taken them, stayed off them. But, I've got a complicated list of symptoms that go in my belly, like the burning, the talk is pure acid, And it happens on and off. I had one attack since I've taped off, the one acid attack since I've taped it off and stuff, just once. So it's all correlated. So I haven't had much bad burning lately, but I did have a bad burning a few weeks ago. Yeah. Very bad burning. And I'm pretty much better from that now until another attack comes.
The burning, tell me about it. So point where you feel it.
I know the burning is when I go to the toilet. So okay. The pain originally,
yeah,
before on the first two treatments, I thought it was here, right?
Yeah.
After the third treatment with the bismuth, this, when I got 90% better when I took the antacids,
yeah,
it was only until I took the antacids, this has disappeared, been gone since.
Perfect.
That was where I was all focused on, and now that's gone, and all the pain's around here now, left. That seems like,
do you ever get heartburn, or it comes up?
No, I never get heartburn, but it happens in waves every now and then. It might happen every day for a week or two. It might happen for a couple of months, or it's on and off. I haven't had it that bad lately, not for a while, but I'll go to the toilet and it'll be like water. It'll just come up constantly, just come out water, uh-huh, not constant water. And right now I'm actually going to the toilet. It's decently and there's no burning, but it's unpredictable. It's all over the place. But I go through episodes of intense burning, like I've had way too much Dr. Pepper. I can't eat or drink spicy stuff because of my belly, but if I'd eaten like extreme spicy stuff, that's
when you get the blood of the
system. Yeah, so it comes and goes, yeah, but I haven't had it for a while.
And does it ever wake you up at night? Do you ever get like liquid at the back of your throat, like something has come up?
Nothing, there's nothing up here. It's just like from my belly, the end of my belly, and then at the end, and like I get a bunch of things. I used to have extreme bloating. I still have a lot of bloating right now, but before I took the antacids, the bloating was extreme. It hasn't gotten as bad as it was, but it was like about to pop, can't breathe kind of extreme.
Was it, did you get a lot of wind with the bloating? A lot of gas?
No.
Okay, alright.
Just no wind. That's what was concerning, because the thing is, if I've got gas or something, nothing comes out.
And was the liquid bowel motions, were they associated with the bloating?
When I go out and all that, it'd come out all burning most of the time when it's like liquid acidity, and that would it would obviously be very painful when I go to the toilet, but once that wears off, the pain and the bloating goes down noticeably. It doesn't go all the way down, but it goes noticeably down.
And so the acid you're talking about in that regard is very much rectal, it's anal.
Before it comes out, I can just feel like nausea, dizzy, a bit like I'm going to vomit. A generally sickly feeling. I can feel that the burning is going to come out,
mm-hmm,
so I can feel it before it comes out, but when it comes out it's obviously very painful at the very end. But I haven't had that. It comes and goes. I know that it will come again, but it won't be, it's not as bad as it used to be since before I took the antacids. Since I took them, I haven't been too bad.
When it does happen, do you get pain that is relieved by, like, it's painful that past the
acid stuff, yeah.
What about the stomach pain? Like, does that get better under the bowel?
The upper side seems to have nothing to do with the bottom side.
Yeah.
But the upper side, the what causes the upper side is basically whenever I eat, between 2 and 15 minutes after I eat, I'll have a nausea attack and I just have to wait it out. It might take a few hours and then I'll come a little bit good again. Basically, whenever I eat, it's a nightmare to eat because I know if I have to eat, I know it's going to happen. I'm going to be nausea, fatigue, blah, blah, blah. So I eat and then I see maybe there's like a 70-80% chance that will happen. Despite, doesn't matter what I eat, 70-80% chance I'll have one of these nausea attacks, mm-hmm, and I just have to wait it out for like 2, 3, 4, maybe up to 6 hours and then I'm good again. I just have to.
And do you
just have to lie in the lounge for a while and just wait it off.
Do you get full very easily? Do you feel like up a meal and go, oh, just 2 bites and I'm done?
I can't eat. It's actually frustrating because I can't eat as much as I want because I eat I can't eat a little bit because the nausea attacks that happen when I eat too much. So I have to eat in small amounts. My appetite's fine.
Yeah, okay,
it's just that I can't eat as much as I would like to. So when I took the antacids, I was able to eat again. I'm like, oh my god, I'm going to have a drink of alcohol for the first time in ages. And no sick from that. I have two sandwiches, and like, oh my god, it's been so long since I did that, but you know, when I'm bad like I am now, I usually am, when I wasn't taking those antacids, it's like, I just have to have small, one sandwich is too much for me. I still get hungry, I want to eat, but I really can't. Yeah.
Now, the doctor also said, on top of the initial Helicobacter treatment, you're also on just the Nexium, just the Acinetobacter.
I took the Nexium for a period of time and then I stopped taking it, and then I thought that was supposed to be only for the, That's where I took those antacids. Like, I took the Nexium, it didn't seem to have anything to do with it. It didn't seem to have any effect on my belly acid. So when I took the antacids, they do.
How long before you take
I took them, I think I took them for every course of the Helicobacteria. Bacteria? They should call it Bacteria. Pylori. It makes more sense. When I took the three pylori treatments, they'd given me Nexium for all three, if I recall.
Yeah.
And I took it for the duration and maybe like 2 or 3 weeks after at least. I think the third one, I took it for a bit longer than that.
Yeah, so it's only been in the context of the Helicobacter treatment, not independent of it.
No, I haven't had any independent of it.
So just so I can summarise it and make sure I understand it right, we've got this recurrent but intermittent, fairly intense abdominal pain, fairly reliably brought on by eating. You've had some relief from the oral kind of topical antacids.
Yeah, not anymore.
But it's not complete.
No. I was taking it for 2 to 3 weeks, and then I tapered off it, and then I went back on it again, and like the antacids acids worked for like 2 to 3 weeks, about 3 weeks, and they don't work anymore. So if I take the maximum dose of antacids now, they won't work. They were working then, dramatically working. They don't work anymore.
And you've also had episodes of loose bowel motions that feel very acidic.
That's most of the time right now. Right now it's actually quite solid, but you know, tomorrow it'll be water. Probably might be water again. It's all over the place.
Fair. All right, that makes sense. Now, apart from the breath test, is there any other kind of investigation that you've had here today?
No, I think it's just been the breakfast.
And no blood tests?
I'm not sure. I might have had a blood test, I'm not sure. I know that I might have actually done the blood test with the blood test, so I'm not sure.
No.
I don't think I did.
Well, after blood test, I was from the hospital when I was 3 years old. Okay, all right. So, these things are always trivial. They're very non-specific, but they're very real.
They're all together. It's complicated symptoms, don't need to be complicated. Look, I've got a problem with my belly, with my stomach and upper intestine, which is almost certainly connected to Helicobacter ulcers. Almost certainly that's what it is.
Yeah.
So it's not like these symptoms are just all kinds of diseases I've got. No, it's all together for one thing.
Yeah.
One comes on, they all come up.
And do you have the results of the breath test there?
No, this is just the...
By the same letter I've got.
Yeah, if you want it.
Because those breath tests, well, they're good, and if we've got a good response to something, they're reliable, they're not 100%.
Yeah, what I figured is if it was when it was all in here, when I took those breath tests that came negative, all the pylori might have been, if it's pylori, all the pylori might have all been there and none of my stomach, might not have picked it up.
Yeah. And so it is tricky sometimes to really get a definitive diagnosis. Because there can be a lot of distractors in terms of the symptomatology and how it responds, because a lot of things will respond to antacid therapy. And when we're faced with this kind of, I guess, one, we need to establish a diagnosis, and then two, we need to work on how they kind of relieve the symptoms. And I think it's very easy sometimes just to attribute it to the
Helicobacter, which I'm saying. I'm not concerned. I can't say it's definitely Helicobacter pylori, but I'm like 95% sure it is.
Yeah. And I think we just need to be systematic and make sure we're not ascribing to that when we're missing someone else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there's a couple of things we need to learn. Alright. So one, I think we should probably, just for my own kind of peace of mind, I want to make sure your liver and your bile ducts are working okay. So that would be a blood test and maybe an
ultrasound. I did an ultrasound at one point. During my last test, I did a renal.
Oh, perfect. And that was all okay?
As far as I'm
concerned. As far as you're aware, that was
great.
That's good. So we can take that one forward because it's expensive and it's already done.
They would have told me. The people who did it said they don't see anything unusual and I never had anything from the GP about it. So
that's
great. That was during my last follow-up treatment.
Yeah, and then we'd also probably just need to just do some blood tests to make sure that's okay and make sure there's no kind of symptoms or signs of ongoing inflammation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the gout is a temple of surprises. You know, it is misleading and distracting. I think potentially what we need to do, maybe even down the track for the next little while, organizing our characters to look down inside.
Endoscopy.
Yeah, to look at your esophagus and your stuff.
I don't think I need an endoscopy. The back end is done with like a sometimes thing that's connected to the top end.
Yeah.
Things mess up in the top end and then it gets all acidic on the top back end sometimes. It's not a recurrent, like a big problem.
Yeah.
It's on the bottom end. Oh, it's all pretty much up here. It's on my stomach.
Yeah, okay, cool. I think that might be reasonable. I mean, even if it's negative, all right, it's good because we can exclude a lot of things there.
Yeah. You mean you're looking for like ulcers or something?
Yeah, so I would look for ulcers. I would take some biopsies because then I can look definitively for the head to go back to all the
things. But I've got ulcers. You don't want to come into ulcers, that.
No, so we don't often biopsy the ulcers. We biopsy around them. It's not just helicobacter in the ulcer, we've seen them distributed around the
body. That's what I was concerned about if you're doing an ulcer, you're cutting an ulcer that doesn't heal. That doesn't
Now, the other thing, if it is ulcers, depending on the type of ulcers, we have to consider systemal and some stronger antacid medication to try and encourage them to heal. Now, the next thing is one variety of that, and generally what we say is we want a couple of months before we even start noticing the peak effect.
Yeah.
But in primary hospital, you've had some ulcers, and we just haven't given you enough duration to sustain.
That's what I figured is probably the case. As I said, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm about 95% sure there's some kind of infection, probably coilitis that's causing those ulcers. The ones here that I've got right now, I never had a problem there before. It was always situated here.
Yeah.
Now the whole like major epicenter of it has gone from there to here, changed completely to different locations.
Yeah. Now, look, I guess even if we do it, we find nothing.
Still rule some things out.
Yeah, exactly. Because what we do after, we have to be systematic in our approach to these things to make sure that we're not. Now, you're a young man, so a lot of the things that we worry about, the things like gastric cancer and things like that, would be very unlikely. And your symptoms don't really fit in that. But also, this camera test gives the opportunity to look. This camera test, the gastroscopy, gives us that peace of mind to say, look, that is normal.
How far is it going down?
So we do the stomach and maybe the first 10 centimetres of the small bowel.
Okay.
Just because of the big...
Well, that's a small intestine, mate.
Yeah.
Small intestine.
Yeah. And we take some little back biopsies, so from the stomach and from the small bowel as well.
Okay. How many do you think you take?
So generally we take 4 little pinches of tissue.
How big would they be?
Oh, they're less than a millimetre.
Oh, that's nothing.
No, yeah, that's fine.
I had biopsies done before for my skin and they took out like one.
No. So
like a centimetre, 3 of them.
The camera is about as thick as my little finger and I pick the ball biopsy forceps down a channel in the camera.
Yeah.
All right, so they're tiny tweezers that will fit down my camera, a little channel that's less than 3 millimetres wide.
Yeah.
And I have to be able to fit down there.
They're not like the biopsies I put before.
No, these are tiny. These are pinches of tissue. Alright, tiny things. Let me say we'll go a quick chat with Dr. Singh and then we'll sort some things out. Alright. Any other questions today at the moment?
That's one question. Considering the known and unknown tea, would you recommend any kind of diet there? Because I try all different things and
it's a really tricky question.
Yeah.
Because you're right, there's a lot of dietary changes that can cause things.
Yeah, I try something and try something else. This works, but I try something that works for a while, that stops working, and I have to move on to something else.
Yeah, exactly. So, at the moment, no. Without a clear diagnosis, I wouldn't be suggesting dietary changes.
I don't have a bad diet, by the way.
If there's something that clearly works for you,
just keep going.
But I think we would probably recommend that after we've done this.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll just keep on doing diet watching.
Yeah, sit tight for 2 minutes and I'll be back shortly. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Jeremy, I'm Dr. Singh.
How are you doing?
Yeah, nice to meet you. I hear you're quite the man to go to if things need to be done and medications are hard to get.
We're talking about the Bismarck.
I had that. You're probably, you're a gastroenterologist, probably know what I'm talking about with Bismarck.
Yes. I
did it three times and I had to get the Bismarck from a friend overseas.
Yeah, not available at all three. Well, that's good, but at least that's clear, yeah? Now, the question is, whether having that infection has made your insides become desensitized and is causing still that little bit of uncomfortable.
The area that used to always be here, and the whole area is mixed, so I never had pain in there before. Sure. That time.
Yeah. So I think, what we'll do is make sure that firstly it's not anything else by doing all the appropriate tests, and also make sure that there hasn't been any damage done by having that infection there. And it's not made you left with an irritated stomach, other than needing to be watching what you eat, how much you can eat, and making sure it's not going to cause you any other long-term problems.
I eat very well, and I am eating small quantities because I eat good.
Then you get in trouble.
Yeah, I get really sick. I can't eat very many things.
Good. So I think what we're going to do is just give you a thorough look over. You need a couple of blood tests, especially celiac and iron studies, B12 thyroid.
Yeah.
And then we're going to look in your insides, top and bottom, and it's done, so we're not missing anything.
Yeah.
And some imaging to make sure all the other organs, like just simple ultrasound, make sure all your organs are in. So we've covered all our bases.
Yeah.
Okay? And if all that comes back negative, that's a good thing. Then we're going to say, come back to you and say, mate, we might have to learn how to live around this condition with noticing our intolerances, the amount of quantities, etc.
Well, now I'm not, this is not just intolerance. I'm not saying it is,
I'm saying we're going to exclude other things.
Yeah, because I eat a small amount of stuff and it's like a 50% chance I actually pass out.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's how we're doing all the tests.
Okay.
We're taking not only the simple tests, the invasive testing. We're going to say where you're not right.
Yeah.
Okay? Alright, see you then.
I'll sort it out. Right, so now we have to do the fun part, the paperwork. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to organise the camera test.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about this. If we're going to go through all the risks from the anaesthetic, let's do the colonoscopy as well.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
You're not going to take samples in the back end as well.
Yeah, it depends on what we find.
Okay.
So it's the same type of thing, tiny little pinch of the tissue, no big tissue.
Yeah.
Now, these are very safe procedures. We do 50 of them a week without complication.
Okay.
And complications, when they happen, usually happen in someone who's a lot older and has got a lot more comorbidities in you, like bad heart, bad lungs, all that stuff things that don't apply to you. The procedure is...
I had a colonoscopy a very long time ago and it was actually very painful.
Where did you have that done?
That was... more like 25 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. Things have changed in 25 years. So hopefully that won't be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do give you sedation.
Yeah.
So you're not awake because obviously you're not going to tolerate something going down your top end if you're awake.
Yeah.
But it's not an anaesthetic so deep that you need breathing tubes or machines or anything like that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yep.
Now, there are some risks to this procedure. It's not completely risk-free.
Can you explain the risks?
So the risks are one from the anaesthetic, but like I said, it's a light anaesthetic, and you don't have a lot of anaesthetic risk factors. Anaesthetic risk factors. So you don't have heart disease, you don't have lung disease, you haven't had strokes, all those type of things that make people, giving people anaesthetic high risk.
Okay.
The risk from the procedure itself is that there's a less than 1 in 1,000 of chance of damage to the food pipe just by putting the camera down.
Okay.
Now that can be as simple as a little bit of a bruise.
Yeah.
The worst outcome would be like a tear in the food pipe.
What happens to that tear?
If that was the case, you would need an operation to fix it.
What, like stitches or something like that?
Yeah, probably something even a little bit bigger. Yeah.
What?
Well, no, they would have to suture it closed.
What do you mean?
They'll have to stitch the hole under the top of the clothes.
Yeah, somebody stitch it up like stitch the hole.
Yeah, but it's not just sutures, like it's a big operation to get to it.
So what does that involve? What does the operation involve?
Well, it involves trying to get to where it is, and then if they can do it from the camera, they'll stitch the clothes inside.
Yeah,
and if not, they would have to do a big incision to try and get to
what
it.
What kind of incision?
I don't know, I'm not a surgeon.
Okay.
But they'll have to fix it.
Okay.
Alright. This is a very uncommon side effect and risk, but it's still a possibility.
and even less of it than you. And the same thing with the bowel. They can put, there's a tiny risk of a chance of a hole in the bowel, but once again, if you've been people who have got surgery or radiotherapy to their bowel and got scar tissue in the bowel, they wouldn't know. But like I said, it's globally, it's less than 11,000, and you would be even smaller than that because, you know, you're young and otherwise healthy.
That 1 in 1,000 includes a lot of old people that you typically have at home.
Correct. And people have had surgery and radiotherapy and all those other things which you don't have. What's the other risk? So the other risk, the most common side effect is like your throat is a little bit sore because the camera has to go down there.
I did this before and the only thing, like my throat was okay, that when I said I've had a long time ago, my throat was fine. And when they put it in me, I was actually still conscious and it was extremely painful and
weird. Yeah, so I mean, if that still happens, then you need to let us know. And we're going to give you some more sedation. Or,
what they did is they were going to like, bang, like really hard.
We don't really do that. So I'm not sure why they were doing that 25 years ago. But we don't do that.
They're a different place.
Yeah. Now, we'll take some small pinches of tissue to send off to our pathologist. And they will always bleed a little bit. It's like a little cut in your finger or your hand. It'll bleed for a couple of seconds and stop.
Yeah, that's about the inside one.
Yeah. But there's always a small chance if there's a bigger blood vessel hidden underneath that might bleed a bit more. So you have to keep an eye on your bowels for a little while, make sure they're all okay. If you see a lot of blood, you have to
come back.
Or blood that's not stopping, you have to come back.
No, no, no. Doesn't blood from off the top end typically turn black?
It does.
So it's just dark basically, not just red, but dark.
Yes, yeah, pretty much. Now, you would need someone to pick you up afterwards because you
don't have any oxygen.
Where about do you live?
I live all the way at Central Coast Road 1. I don't go near one hospital because I've got legal proceedings with them, so I can't do that. And it's also easy to do. I've got a taxi train here, but I live next to a train station. It's actually easy to get to
do. Do you live with anyone or on your own?
On my own.
Do you have any neighbours that you go on well with?
Yeah.
I just want people to be aware.
Yeah, my neighbour will come and check on
me. Yeah, so that's really good. Now, if it's okay, can I get your signature there? This is your permission to do the test.
Yeah, can I have to read actually sign?
Sure, that's fine. So you need to sign it out there. So we'll put you back out in the waiting room.
Yeah.
After a pen and a clipboard out there. And then we need to know a little bit about you. Just so that we can make sure that the anaesthetic and everything is going to be safe.
Yeah.
We do need the most important
thing. Oh, by the way, I just mentioned I am of the red haired people and I know that red haired and green eyed people have a different interaction with anaesthetic and anaesthetic population.
Can we just need an approximate height and weight?
I think I'm like 5'10".
Yeah, that's fine. You can fill it out there.
I'm about 80. I think I'm about 86 right now.
Good. All right. Now, any information you don't have, just leave blank, that's fine. Alright, and if you give it to the girls at the front desk, they'll sort it out. Any questions?
We'll all be doing this today, or we won't be going back home today, we're staying here, will we?
No. So, you can do this today.
Yeah.
If you want to wait and do it here, that's fine. And just give it to the girls and they can submit it straight away. If you prefer, if you want to go through it in more detail, take it home, read it, and post it back in.
That's
for you. Now, the other thing I want to do is we want to do some blood tests.
You know how many, just to measure that 1 in 1,000 number, because it actually is quite high. The type of people who have this kind of operation, they typically old people.
Who have the complication or the operation?
The old people with the complication.
So. Age is a risk factor for side effects, but more of a risk factor is things like I said, previous operations or things that are going to introduce scar or stiffness into the thing, so they don't move normally.
Yeah, not like tearing and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not the pliable kind of normal tissue that we're normally dealing with. Are you still at Ingram Street?
Yes, I am.
We'd also like to do some blood tests. Mm-hmm. Even though it's on the New South Wales Health Pathology, you can take it anywhere.
Certificate to take the blood or blood test place.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I've done that, yeah. Just like I do the breast test around the pathology office, yeah.
Yeah, so you can do it at the hospital, or you can do it at Douglas Hamilton or anyone. Alright, so just.
So you're giving a certificate to take to
I'll give you this one here, exactly.
I got you. Is it 1 in 1,000 chance of complications or 1 in 1 chance of dying?
1 out of 1,000 complications.
Okay. That's an important factor.
I sense there's a bit of anxiety about that, and I want to reassure you that overwhelmingly it's a very, very safe.
I just want to be clear on that, on the risks of our assault. I just want to be clear on that. Yeah, I know that I need, I'm not too sure about the con not to do, but I do understand why you would want to do one, but I've already knew that I definitely need an endoscopy anyway, so I'd rather not have either, but I know that I definitely always need an endoscopy to have a look.
Well, I guess it's shortcut. We could spend forever. You came back to me every 3 months going, oh,
yeah,
things about saying, things about
saying.
Yeah,
because I'm actually like not a little bit sick, I'm actually very sick, so I can't afford the, you know, month in, month out, year in, year out kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Alright, I'll give that to you. Okay. That's one, that's the copy for you. That's the one to take to the pathology place.
Alright, yeah.
For your own record.
The pencil one's mine to take in that one.
Yeah, you can copy that if you want.
Yeah,
Alright. Do you pay off for those ones?
Is that okay to fold this?
Yeah.
Because I'll do something if you want.
No, okay. Alright, thanks Jeremy. Put your desk.
So for this?
Yep.
I read it and sign it.
Read it and sign then. If you're happy. Read it to you. You don't need it now. You've got to do some free time. Yeah, Jeremy, it's entirely up to you. Alright? Look, and this form here is not, it doesn't, read it through and convince yourself.
Yeah.
It is not, it's just your permission. I can't do anything to you without your permission. You can change your mind whenever
you
want.
Just like you feel what I'm saying, that's all.
Yeah. And it's just, I can't do anything without it.
Yeah, I'm
catching. Yeah. That's alright?
Good. I'll just read it through first.
Yeah, that's fine. Alright, thanks Jeremy.
I'll read this, sign it, and I'll see from there.
After that, these yellow pages mark the patient.
Yeah, I've got to fill them in.
Yeah, and a lot of them won't apply to you because you're young and healthy.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of tick boxes, no.
Yeah.
Alright?
Yeah, so we'll fill all this in, and I'll set the front desk, and I'll see from there.
Yeah, they'll take it from you, and they'll submit it to the booking office.
Yeah.
And then those are the guys who give you a call with a time and date.
Oh, so they'll get time away before.
We won't be doing it today.
You should be
gentle with the doctor, don't you? Stand roughly 2 months. We only did a bit of arm wrestling, I thought.
Yeah, I've had no one
Every time they do that, they end up
saying, you didn't hurt anything. You didn't hurt anything.
something else in the physician cavern, still right with him. Yeah. We had a bit of a wrestle there. But, yeah, lingering enough for you, so.
Thank you.
Okay. It's hard to get down to the place
you're right, sure. Thank you, everybody.